Today's programming is made possible in part by a grant from Birkenstock Concepts by Heel to Toe in downtown Urbana. For over 25 years, offering all sizes and widths of Birkenstocks, from clogs and sandals to work, dress, and sports shoes. Birkenstock Concepts offers repair and modification services and a certified podorthist and orthotist on staff.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. On the program today, our dog trainers, Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel, are here. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us once a month on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs, dog behavior, dog training, dog care. They join us on the first Friday of the month, and it's been a while, though, since we've seen Carol. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's so nice to be back.
333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you have questions for Carol and Jim. If you're listening outside the local dialing area, use the toll-free line, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. So what were you up to? You were working with Robbie?
We were at dog shows. Yeah. We went to Golden Specialties, one in St. Louis and one in Indianapolis, and they just happened to fall on that first Friday of the month. So Robin filled in for me quite handily.
Yes.
How do you know?
I listened to you the one time because I had to call in with a minor correction.
Oh, I forgot.
That was the first time you were you were gone.
And then the next Friday, I was we were actually showing at that time, so I couldn't hear the show.
Yeah, Robin did a fine job.
You can listen on the web. They're archived.
I did go back and listen to that first one, but I haven't listened to the last one. So the dog shows were fun, but
I guess if you're not on, you don't care to listen to it again.
Huh? You know, I have never gone back and listened to one of our shows. I never want to, because I thought I would be so critical of how I sounded. I don't want to. It might inhibit me in further future shows, so I've never gone back and listened to any of them.
Hmm. So how did Robbie do?
Nothing. No, we were in the loser's pile. He always looks beautiful to me. Mm-hmm. But when you go to a specialty, and we've talked about these before, that's the only breed that's there, just golden retrievers.
Right.
And they're all beautiful dogs. I mean, the competition is very fierce. And so if you go in with the expectation of not doing anything, you won't be disappointed. So that's kind of how I look at it. I just like to be able to see all these dogs you've only read about or seen in magazines and meet wonderful people. So it's a social event for me.
And Robbie, does he enjoy it?
He does now. he does. He knows.
Off to a slow start?
Well, for a while it was just kind of, I don't think he cared for it all that much. But when we travel, we stay in motels, and he loves that part. He loves.
Me too.
He just loves it. And the last few shows
especially
we've gone
the cable.
So you don't have cable.
We don't have cable. So.
Well, he gets to watch Animal Planet all the time. Robbie does. But the last few shows, you know, it's very formal. You get a bath and you get groomed and he sees me packing and he's all excited and he races to the car and he just loves it. And he doesn't care how far we drive or how close. He just thinks the whole thing is just fun. Mm. He loves it. Mm.
Last time on the program when Robin was here, we talked about how difficult it can be to have a popular breed and show it. The competition is stiff.
It says a lot to me for the breed that there's the beautiful dogs out there that conform to the standard. I never get tired of just looking at them. And, I'm just a pet owner.
Yeah.
I'm not a professional handler, and I never will be. So it's pretty apparent. I feel it's pretty apparent when I'm out there with him, but, you know, it's the way it goes.
We've got a listener waiting to talk with us, I believe, on line one. So if you put your headphones on, we'll talk with our first caller this afternoon. Line one, go ahead.
Okay. I'm just calling in with a request that our people doing this program remind the great listening audience about dogs or any other animals or small children in cars now that the weather's getting hot. I think it's never amiss to tell them again. And that's my song for today.
Okay.
That's good advice. And, you know, it's a beautiful day out there. and it was yesterday, and it's cool, but the sun is hot. And to put a dog or a child in the car with the windows rolled up, that's it.
And as I observed last month, even if you wind them down, you know, a tenth of an inch or whatever people do, you have to wind them down substantially so that you get air movement in the car. And the obvious problem is that the dog can jump out if they're not restrained. So the solution, don't take your dog with you if you're going to park for a long time.
Yeah. What I did at the Bloomington shows, I went over by myself, and you have to go in and set up and drag all your stuff in, and the last thing to go in is the dog. Well, I had that problem. So before I left the house, I used a little common sense, and I grabbed the extra key for the car and put it in my pocket. And that way, while I was unloading the car with Robbie in it, I could leave the air conditioning running and not worry that, you know, the car, because my car has this weird thing that happens to it. It will automatically lock itself at any given time. It's a flaw, but it never does it when I want somebody to fix it. So I had the extra key with me, left the car running, and was able to unload the car, and he was comfortable and safe.
We should also observe, though, that he was in a crate inside
the
car.
Oh, yeah, he was in a crate in the car. Yeah. He travels in the crate.
Yeah. We have vans, and we often have a lot of dogs, and we travel with them, but we just open the side doors and the back doors and all the windows. But the dogs don't go anywhere because they're in crates.
Yeah, and find that shady spot to park.
You know, and there's about a 200-degree difference. We now have exclusively white vans, but we used to have dark blue, and you couldn't touch them in the summer. How foolish of us, but they're white now, and it's just
it does
much
make better.
Much cooler inside.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener, someone waiting for us on the toll-free line. Line 4, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I called a little over a month ago when my wife and I first got our black lab puppy and asked about crate training, and I've got a follow-up question about it now that we've had her for a little bit longer, and also a question about how she does with our cats. Our black lab's at about 3 months, and we've been getting conflicting information from books and websites about how long, like during the day, depending on the age of the dog, that you can leave a dog in the crate and it be okay for the dog and everything. And we're just sort of curious. I was curious what your sort of view is on length in the crate and how old the dog is.
Well, what's the rule of thumb for how long?
I've been seeing like 1 month for every or
1 hour for
every
month of age is their ability to control their bowel and bladder. So for some dogs, it's sooner. But as your question, how often should the dog go out during the day, or how long can you keep it confined during the day?
Right, like we're coming up like in September. My wife starts teaching at university, and I'm still working through the summer, and the dog will be probably about 5 months, a little over, and the dog might be, we might be at the greatest length of time gone for about 6 to 6.5 hours for 2 days a week, and we didn't know if we should make arrangements for someone to come over and let her out, or if we could try to push it that long.
With me, the psychology is, if I think the dog has to go potty, I have to go potty.
No, it's true.
I'll run home and let the dog out. The dog doesn't do anything, but I'm going, whew, because it starts to bother me. I think we mentioned, you know, once the dog is trained, if the dog is a house dog, the amount of hours that it's in a crate or in the house is kind of an arguable point, but if the dog can only handle 3 hours without going potty, it doesn't matter if it's in a crate or on your couch. You know, it's probably better off in the crate, at least as far as your couch is concerned, so it doesn't go potty on the couch. So if the dog can't, it's not a crate time that's the issue. That's what I think what we're saying. It's how long can the dog go without being let out, whether it's in a crate or just in the house. Or are you going to keep it outside during the day?
Well, we're trying to avoid that. As a kid, we had a dog that we kept outside during the day when we were gone, and the dog just seemed to be more spastic because there were kids in the neighborhood growing up, and I don't know if they were taunted, but the dog just got a little bit more frantic. And we found that with our dog, you know, she does great in the crate. She loves going in there and stuff. But we try to get her out as much as possible during the day and keep her active. She's going to be a big lab, probably close to 90 pounds. And so we try to get her out and exercise her a minimum of 2, if not 3 times a day throughout the week. My other question is, we have 2 cats, and we have one cat that is completely afraid, will not come near the dog unless it's in the crate and asleep. The other cat has been around dogs before, and there's still the back and forth. The dog is barking at a very high pitch and trying to jump at it, sort of to play with it, and the cat thinks this is completely horrible. But I guess I'm wondering, is there an average time before maybe the relationship will, there'll be a little bit of detente between the dog and the cat, and things will kind of mellow out a bit?
Are you keeping them separated deliberately?
No, we're not keeping them separated. Oh, no. One cat, I mean, we have baby gates in the main level, so the dog does not go upstairs unattended and doesn't go in the basement yet, because that's where the cat box is. But the cats are free to go around, and so, you know, when the cats come to get to the food, they'll go by the dog and run by real quick. But the dog gets terribly excited still and wants to run and jump at him and bark really loud. And we know the dog's not hurting the cat, so we just kind of let them, you know, we watch them, but we just kind of let them bark and hiss at each other. But when the dog is quiet and pretty wore out, the cat will come up and sit right next to it, and the dog won't do much. But it's during the excited periods, we're wondering if that's just something that'll, you know, until the dog is, you know, 18 months or 2 years, or if it's something that the dog will slowly get more used to being
around. That's probably individual with the dog and with the cat as well. You know, most cats wouldn't be bothered by dogs if they would just walk or sit, because a dog generally are like wolves. Interesting thing, I think, on Marty Stoffer's Animal America, whatever it was, but they showed a pack of dogs surrounding a deer, and the deer just was kind of frightened and just stood there, and not dogs, wolves, I should say, and the wolves didn't know what to do. They kind of poked the deer, and they kind of looked at each other and went around sniffing, and finally the deer thought it saw an opening and took off, and then the wolves went after it and killed it. Same with cats. If the cats would just sit there, most dogs would leave it alone. It's when they run that you've got a problem. So your cat that's afraid and runs, that's what's exciting the dog. It's not the cat in particular.
Okay, so it's the cat's reaction to seeing
the dog. If they take off. When we had cats, we would put the cats with the puppies when they were smaller than the cats and let the cats beat them up. And the dogs, not being the brightest animals in the world, you know, would grow up thinking these cats were the meanest creatures and you got to leave them alone. Except when they got outside and the cats would run and the dog's chase instinct would kick in and, you know, they'd nail the cat and then go, ooh, it was fluffy. I shouldn't have done that.
That is very true.
Yeah.
When we had Shelley, she was fine in the house with the dogs. But she liked to go out in the backyard with us. When she was out in the yard, it was a whole different program. She became then more prey than the house pet that they grew up with.
And a dog like a lab can snap a cat's neck in less time than it takes to say it. So,
right, which is why we always are near them whenever there's interaction. Yeah. The dog basically just jumps up and down and has that high-pitched yelp, mm-hmm. like, I want to play, let's play. And the cat's really good at smacking it around, and
good.
The dog runs away. Because when we first got the puppy, we introduced both cats to the puppy and stuff. But okay, so that's great. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Didn't you say at one time, Carol, that your cat would every morning without fail would go
smack him. Bap. She goes, and it's the cutest picture. I'll always have it in my mind. She would come out in her very ladylike cat way and drink out of their water bowl. And then she'd proceed to wash her face. And you know how they take their time.
Right.
And the two of them would just sit there and not make a move because they knew she was going to drink their water. She was going to use it for her morning wake-up call, and she
Toilet.
Was just there. And when she was finished, then she'd just walk off with her tail in the air, and it's like, okay, you peasants, your turn. It was so funny. Do I have something on my face?
Yes, your nose.
What are you doing this? Do you see what he was doing to me?
No, I'm scratching my nose.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, hi. I had a question about barking. I was wondering if you could give me any advice on how to get my dog to bark less. She just, anybody that gets or anything that gets within sort of a one block radius of my house, she just goes crazy barking. And I was wondering if you had any ideas for how I could get her to stay a little bit calmer.
Jim's got this one covered.
Yeah. Well, this is all theory. In fact, I heard somebody else give it as their theory, and I went, that's my theory. Here's the theory. Dogs originally were domesticated because they barked, and they provided an alarm system for villages. So they've been selected kind of to bark when strangers come by. Your dog has, if there's a gene for that, it has like five of them.
Yeah.
And so it sees movement, it sees strangers.
There she goes in the background. See?
Yeah.
It can hear me. What the dog is doing is alerting you to what it perceives as danger. Normally the dog barks, and people go, shut up, you know, and throw books at it or something. What you want to do is go up to the dog and say, thank you for warning me of this danger. Good dog. The dog will immediately shut up. In fact, no matter what you do to the dog, it will shut up. You could hit it on the head with a 2x4. You could give it a cookie. Whatever you do, it's going to shut up for about a second or two.
Right.
That's when you give it the cookie. You go up and say, thank you for alerting me. The dog's going to stop barking. Wham, you give it the cookie.
Go run and try it right now.
Yeah.
While he's not barking. The other thing to do is, that's when the dog is barking at strangers and obviously doing that. The second thing you can do with regard to that is when the dog barks, train it to run to the middle of the house somewhere and give it a cookie. Mm. In other words, the dog's barking at somebody outside. You've got to be there at first to train it, but after a while they'll see somebody, it'll bark and run to the middle of the house and get its cookie as a reward for alerting. In terms of barking in and of itself, it's hard to stop a dog from barking because they don't understand negative being. Like Jean-Paul Sartre, I think, wrote on being and nothingness, but very few dogs have ever read it. So you can't tell them not to bark. So what you have to do is train them to bark. So, the dog, say, speak, you know, or whatever cue you want and give it a cookie. When the dog is barking, then once it learns to bark on cue, you say stop or something like that or hush, and then reward it when it hushes.
Okay.
So that if the dog is barking and you're not in a situation where you can have it go to the center of the house or something, you can say hush. And the dog knows what that means. Right now, you can say quiet or shut up or
hush.
Hush. You can say anything you want. The dog doesn't know what that means.
Right.
You know what it means, but the dog doesn't in terms of training. So train her to bark on cue, train her to shut up on cue. And then if she's barking excessively, say hush and give her reward. I think the best thing to do, though, is to praise. It's counterintuitive. Praise when it's barking and then take her to the middle of the house and give her a cookie.
Yeah, okay, that's a great idea because I used to always think, sometimes I did end up praising her when she was barking and she did quit barking, and I thought that was a bad thing to do because it was just reinforcing her barking.
Well, a lot of people want the perfect, you know, they come to me and say, Jim, I want a dog that doesn't shed, it doesn't poop in the house, and only barks at bad people, you know. And I go, well, but this way the dog will still alert you, you know, to maybe strangers approaching the house, but it won't go on forever and ever.
Okay. Well, that sounds like good advice. I'll try that.
Okay, you know, barking is a self-rewarding behavior, too.
Mm-hmm.
They like to bark. They get some satisfaction from barking. So you have to be follow all Jim's advice, but be very enthusiastic and consistent to make that reward.
Oh, and by the way, don't hit the dog over the head with a 2x4.
Oh, no.
No letters, please. Uh-huh. I was only kidding.
And I have noticed that she does like bark. I mean, I kind of like it when she barks sometimes, too, because when she just lays there quiet all day, it seems like something's wrong.
So. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. The dogs are too quiet.
Yeah.
The kids aren't
too
making
quiet.
Enough noise.
Yeah.
And you go in and the entire bathroom is covered with paint.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. Dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us this afternoon. They join us on the first Friday of the month to talk with us about dog behavior and training. They are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn, and we've got a number of callers who
look
are
at that. The
lining
whole thing's
up. Great.
Blinking over there.
They're mad because I said hit the dog.
Well, we're
they're used
those...
to it by now.
Well,
hey, we want to plug our trial, so before the show's
okay.
over.
Okay, we'll do that. But I wanted, before we get
yeah,
these
we have
listeners
callers.
All lined up here, mm-hmm. someone wrote to us and asked a question, and this gentleman says, I won't be able to call during the show, but I did have a question for the dog trainers. I just returned from Europe, and I found the dogs there to be much more docile than dogs here. There were many dogs off and off lead, yet they seem much less aggressive than dogs I see around Champaign-Urbana. Was I just imagining this, or is it the product of different breeding or training?
It's true. It's a whole, it's cultural. They dogs are...
What's true?
The dogs, well...
I think
the
better
behaved dogs are obviously out in public.
Yeah, I was going to say the better behaved dogs are in public.
But they're accepted in
right.
public spots that they're not here. And going out to dinner, taking your dog with you, taking your dog to the grocery store, taking your dog to the library.
To the pub.
This is perfectly acceptable.
Take your dog
so
to
these
the pub.
Dogs, the people that live there, know that this is going to happen. They have the puppies. The expectation is there the dogs will behave, and they do.
It's like taking your children out mm-hmm. to dinner when they're little and telling them, you know,
this is how
proper
it works.
Behavior.
And I think dogs are far more accepted in public than they are here.
Interesting.
We went to Canada many years ago and went to a formal garden, like an 800 or 500 acre formal garden place, and they let our dogs in. And not only the dogs were welcome, the drinking fountains had at the top was for people, and at the bottom they had little bowls with water constantly circulating for the dogs. I mean, they were welcome. And I said to myself, what a civilized country this mm-hmm. is. Because here in Champaign, you can't take your dog in the forest preserve because they might poop there.
Oh, my. So, heavens forbid.
Yeah. And so it's just a difference in the attitude toward dogs. But in Europe... I would say you tend to see the better behaved dogs in public, as you might hear.
But I do think on the whole they probably are better behaved.
I think
dogs.
They're more sensitive to dogs behaving well in public.
Let's talk with some listeners now. First, we're going to go to a caller on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi, hello. I was listening to your advice about the barking. And I had a sort of a follow-up question to that. How do you handle it when you're not home? Like my dog, when we leave the house, we've had a few complaints from the neighbors that just constant barking, and when we sort of when we're coming down the street, you can hear it sort of echoing off in the distance. Is the technique that you described, can that be extended to when you're not home?
Well, the problem with dog training when you're not there is it's impossible.
Yeah.
You can't do it telepathically. You have to be there. What you can try to do, I take it you have only one dog?
Yes, one. He's a 9-year-old Maltese.
How sad.
how much noise can a little Maltese make?
They can make a lot of noise. Mm.
They lack in size, they make up for it in volume, I think.
You can get the... Here's a bunch of suggestions.
Okay.
There are toys that you put cheese in and the dog mm-hmm. tries to get it. We get cow femurs, the soup bones, and the dogs spend many hours trying to get the marrow out. And as soon as you get it out, stuff it full of crunchy peanut butter.
Okay.
Because not only do the dogs get the peanut butter, but then they spend a lot of time.
We're going to have to find a smaller bone than a cow femur for
yeah,
this
I know,
guy.
I know, but
bigger than my dog.
Yeah, you probably crawl inside that
yeah.
femur.
There you go.
My dogs are substantially larger than yours.
Pet stores would have
you get the
sterilized
idea.
Smaller bones.
And that, okay, those kinds of things will keep the dog occupied.
Right.
You can get maybe a bird and, you know, something for the dog to watch all day.
Right.
Other people will leave, like, the TV on or something like that. But that will work for a short while. But you've got to really train the dog to be quiet while the TV is on. You can't just turn on the TV.
You know, it would be helpful, too, if you could find out what stimulates the dog to bark or if it just barks to bark.
I have a feeling it's just lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, what I tend to leave the radio on quite loud because one thing that sets it off is the noise of people going by in the street. And I feel like if I can drown that out with a little bit of ambient but sort of radio noise.
Yeah, dogs' hearing is so keen. It's not like ours.
Right.
They can pick things out of, it's like odors, you know. Mm. Drug dealers will put coffee around their drugs so the dogs can't smell it.
Mm.
And it's like waving your hand and hoping somebody can't see your face. You know, it's like the dog can smell it all. They smell the coffee. They go, there's cocaine here and some very delicious smelling coffee. Yeah, it might work, but what you want to do is have training sessions with the dog when you turn up the radio and as we described, teaching the dog to hush when the radio's on.
Huh.
In other words, people think, well, I'll turn on the TV and the dog will watch the TV. Well, we watch TV, but dogs don't.
You know
really
what just
that.
Came to me? There's this neat little gadget out now where it's a little ball, but you record your voice. And the dog pushes the little ball, and he could tell the dog to hush all day. but it's meant for lonely. It's for lonely dogs, and so it's a voice recording of your voice, and it keeps the dog company.
Well, so there are mechanical ways of diverting the dog. Getting a second dog to play with is, I always think, you know, dogs are social animals,
yeah.
And that's why it's socially isolated.
Mm.
And what we've described as the last puppy syndrome. It is thought that, by some and me included, that dogs will bark when they're lonely because back when wolves were wolves, the mother would move the den from time to time for various reasons, and the last pup, wolves can't count. So, you know, they can one, two, and many. They take several puppies, and then they might forget the last puppy because
right.
They go, oh, I got quite a few here. That's as many as I had. So if you're the last puppy, you better start screaming so mom knows to come back and get you.
Mm.
And this carries on through dogs that when they're left alone, they have an instinct to scream so that nobody forgets about them.
Right.
And so if there is some social interaction, and it doesn't have to be with a dog, it could be with a cat, it could be with a bird or you know something, even something on TV if the dog learns to look at the TV.
Mm.
So some sort of society for the dog. You could videotape, you can get a tape loop and have you and the dog on the TV and train the dog to watch it. Once again, people think that if they're on the TV or the dog's on the TV, the dog can understand a television and they really have to be trained to it.
Yeah.
So turning the radio up is a good idea, but have some sessions where the radio's off and then you turn it on and tell the dog to hush and so the dog learns that.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much.
Next, we talk with a listener on line two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is this. I'm calling on behalf of a friend of mine has a dog that's very fond of me and vice versa. Every time I visit, the dog greets me by laying down and peeing, and I'm the only person he does that with. Is that a common occurrence?
Well,
why does he do it? What can be done about it?
It's a type of greeting.
Be flattered.
Yeah, it's a demonstration of submissiveness. I think the thing to do is to distract the dog, and there's nothing you can do to distract it yourself. So what you should have is like have a big piece of liver, something that so overwhelms the dog and his desire to eat. You know, that he forgets about being submissive. So you walk up and say, "Here's some liver," and he goes, "Oh boy." And then you get in the house, and once you can get in the house, the dog is over greeting you. He's not going to try to greet you anymore. And so this, I take it, only happens when you first arrive. He doesn't pee the whole time.
Right.
You're
it's like they have to let him out because if I greet him in the house, he pees in the house. So
yeah.
I always have to greet him in the yard.
Well, once again, to go back to wolves, but it's a submissive dog goes up to the alpha wolf. Submissive wolf will roll over on its back and urinate. And then the dominant wolf will smell it or lick it, and that's a kind of a sign of greeting.
You don't have to do that, though.
I wouldn't if I were you.
You might lose your friends.
Yeah.
if I try to distract the dog, like with food, or if they do, After a while, will this eliminate that behavior, or will it have to be done every time, you think?
Well, I would do it every time for a long time, and then try it without it. You know, and don't just cold turkey. Get something a little less desirable.
Yes.
When you start with this, you want something that's overwhelming, like the dog just can't think of anything else but that food that you have. And then
fade that a little bit.
Yeah, in time, you know, you can get down to little generic cookies, and it'll be just as happy, you know.
Okay.
We had friends that Tracy had to greet Tom outside for her whole life because, and he was the nicest guy on the planet, so it wasn't as though he were a big, overbearing, domineering personality. She just really liked him, and they met on the front porch many a time because I knew she'd pee in the house.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 3. Hi.
My question is, I have a puppy that's about 10 weeks old, perhaps, and he's constantly biting. And what are your tricks for reining that in?
Yeah, you should see my hands.
Look. Well, look at these. Look at these scars. What kind of puppy is it, first of all?
It's a mutt, maybe a shepherd.
And they have the nasty sharp, rows and rows of nasty sharp teeth.
Yeah, very sharp teeth. Shark-like teeth.
When it bites you, what are you doing? Are you trying to feed it? Or?
Well, we shake something really loud to distract him.
No, what are you doing when the dog bites you? Not what are you trying
I
to do to
just
prevent
breathing.
It?
Just...
Oh, what are we doing? Oh, we're just hanging out with him, loving him up and things like that.
One of the problems with puppies and with dogs, and I keep, I have big dogs, and I'll toss them a cookie, and sometimes they miss, you know, when I toss it. And they can snap at that cookie 3 times in the air before it hits the ground. If they miss, they go boom, boom, boom. Dogs and puppies are extremely fast with their mouths, and there's no way you can play with a puppy that it can't bite you.
Right.
So when it starts to bite, number one, pull your hands away from it. Okay? Number two, you should have, and this is for training purposes only, don't leave it on, but you should have kind of a drag line. In other words, a collar with a lead on it that you're not using, and the dog kind of walks with it and drags it along. So you pull your hands away, you pick up the drag line, which can be maybe 3 or 4 feet long, so it's very far away from his mouth. You know, you gather it up, and then you put the dog in a timeout place outside or in a crate or something like that.
This is when they get real wound up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when they're biting you, the other thing to do, what I do is I go, ow, I scream real loud. Not at the puppy. I go, ow.
Right.
Sometimes involuntarily. Sometimes it really
You know what really worked for me? I'll tell you the truth. It was bitter apple. I sprayed bitter apple all over my arms and legs.
We thought about doing that.
It worked.
Okay.
It worked because I was just telling somebody last night, met their 3-month-old Labrador puppy. So cute. And those little teeth were so sharp. And I said, I still have all those little marks. And they were all accidental. But I just spray. Right. Then I spray my clothes. I lost a bathrobe to him. You know, he shredded it with those horrible teeth. So I just drench yourself in bitter apple and just, you know, those teeth will fall out.
If you have little kids,
you
don't want to do that.
You go through a lot of bitter apple.
Yeah.
Spray the whole family.
But whatever you do, when the puppy starts to bite, don't, whatever you're doing, if you're playing or feeding, just stop doing it and put the puppy in a timeout place.
Or give him something to chew on that's appropriate, that's not attached to your body.
You can try that.
Try it. They really like to chew on people.
I don't want to reward a dog for biting.
I know. That's where it and Jim's right. That's where it becomes awkward.
Yeah.
Because the puppy then will think, I chew on them, I draw blood, and I get something better to chew on than there are.
Right.
So you just have to be
There are dominance.
Right.
There are dominance exercises you can do.
Oh,
they would be hard to describe over the radio. You can sign up for our puppy classes at the Dog Training Club of Champaign.
We do want to sign up for a puppy class.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It starts June the 1st, the 3rd.
Couple weeks.
21st.
Yeah.
That week they start.
Okay.
We'll
be giving the phone number soon. Call us and sign up.
Phone number.
Yeah.
I do have one question about the crate idea. because we want him to feel like the crate's not a bad place to go, mm-hmm. like for punishment, because we want to kind of have him enjoy hanging out in there sometime. So is that a problem to
when you put the dog in the crate, you don't scream and yell and beat it. You know, you just kind of quietly pick it up, put it in the crate, close the door, and don't leave it in. Maybe leave it in there a minute.
And you know what, too, Jim? I know you, because you've had a zillion and one puppies, but puppies are like kids, and they get overstimulated.
Mm-hmm.
And
they do need time out.
They do. Yeah. And it's, you know, because I did that with mine when he was a puppy. He would get so wound up, and I'd put him in his crate, and he'd be sound asleep in a nanosecond because he was overtired. Well, here's our phone number. Would you like me to give it to you?
Yes.
643-7733.
7733.
Yeah. And you will get a recording, and you'll get a phone number. Two phone numbers, one of which will be mine. So I'll be sure to call you back.
So, yeah, call at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Let's talk with another listener. Bye-bye. Toll-free line, line 4, good afternoon.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I have a question about, I want to get a medium-sized dog. My wife was just diagnosed with a mental disorder, schizophrenia. And I was wondering if there's a good dog and a good training program to kind of give her some companionship and, I don't know, camaraderie.
Any number of dogs. For some reason, duck tollers came into my mind.
Oh, that is really a stretch. Why?
But the other thing is we have a person in our club who's giving what are called TDI classes, which stands for Therapy Dog International, which is a program for therapy dogs, specifically for patients of a variety of kinds. And stay tuned to our webpage, but
it'll be up there.
We'll be offering, or she'll be offering classes in conjunction with the club. The club actually isn't offering.
Yeah, she's going to certify the dogs for TDI. But we had a class last winter, and I held it, and we had every breed you could think of in that class. And you'll see a lot of Labs and Goldens, but that's a very popular breed of dogs, so there's naturally more of them. But we had everything from a little spaniel mix. I think there were 15 dogs in the class. Poodles are very good. Standard poodles are very good for people that have any kind of disability. They're smart and trainable.
I'm sorry.
They're very smart and trainable.
So we can go purchase one of these, a dog, and then enroll in a class and...
Not exactly that.
A dog, you want to do basic obedience before you do anything else.
Yeah, but I think that you'd want to, through some support groups, you might be able to make contact with people that do what you want to do and have a companion for your wife. But find out where they got their dog and what they did with their dog. And I would go that route and get more information before you just purchase a dog and then sign up for classes.
Okay. I knew that they have dogs that help people with all types of disabilities.
They do. And the dogs, the classes that we're talking about are not those kind of dogs. These are dogs that are used, the therapy dogs are used for, all people with disabilities, but they don't live with these people. They're brought to, they work with a brain damage group through injury or stroke, but they don't live with these people. So what you're looking for is you want a dog that's going to be a living companion. So do a little more research before you make your purchase.
Okay. Any, like, a website I should start with? Or I thought I heard you said website.
Oh, Jim was referring to our Dog Training Club website.
You can go to our website and try various links. Off the top of my head, I don't know of any... links there, though, that would be
no, but
you
know
what?
I was on the Delta Society page today.
The Delta Society.
You might start with them. The TDI does not have a very extensive website, but Delta Society does. And that's they're located, I think, in Seattle or mm-hmm. Spokane, Washington.
Well, that's our headquarters.
They've
got a great webpage.
But there might be links on there to help you.
DELTA. And I don't know.
It's an acronym for dedication. I can't remember what the acronym is.
Anyway, either in Google, plug in Delta Society, or I think just the URL is deltasociety.org.
And I was just there this morning for some reason.
They're an international organization with all kinds of therapy, nursing home programs, things like that. And that would be an excellent place to start.
Oh, I really appreciate it. We appreciate it.
Okay.
You're welcome.
And it's deltasociety.org.
Deltasociety.org.
Yeah. Right.
All right. That's where I'll start.
Okay. Thanks for the call this afternoon.
Good guess, Jim.
And Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana is dtccu.prairienet.
Right? Well, it's actually, prairienet.org.
Backslash. You know what I do? I tell people, just Google it. It's so much faster.
Okay.
I think the actual URL is www.prairienet.org / DTCCU.
You don't need the www.
You don't?
No. I got it up here on the
computer. Anymore. Let's, get with it, Jim.
Should we talk with one more caller?
Okay. Yeah, please.
Okay. Line one. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling about a 9-year-old Sheltie who has started peeing in a spot on the dining room rug. History, we got him at 1-year-old. He peed immediately. I happened to see it. I just screamed reactively. He never peed again. When he was annoyed with us, he would occasionally poop in the dining room. We replaced the carpeting with hardwood floors and this area rug. Nothing happened for a year. He went to a kennel for spring break. He hadn't been to a kennel for years and years. Came back, had bad diarrhea, went to his favorite spot for this diarrhea. And since then, he has felt free to pee there. And I'm just at my wit's end and calling for suggestions of how to intervene at this point.
Step one, always. I was going to say, before you said he had the diarrhea, I said, I'll bet he picked something up at the kennel. And not an intestinal thing, but he may have a urinary tract infection of some kind. And
might not have gotten out enough. That'll usually cause that.
Yeah.
The diarrhea could have been from stress.
Right. That's what I thought.
But, you know, I'd go to the doctor. I go to the vet first.
Yeah.
And rule out a couple things.
Yeah. Whenever you get this kind of really rapid change in behavior, without some other obvious cause, it's usually some sort of disease factor. And so I check that out. Now, if it isn't, and he's just saying, I'll pee here. Now, the rug is gone. Is that what you're saying?
No, the rug is there. And my plan is to have it professionally cleaned.
I wouldn't put it back down for a long time if I were you. I'd wait to make sure.
Is it only in that spot?
Yes.
And how big a spot is it, would you say?
It's a corner of the rug, an edge of the rug.
And he's just urinating there, or is he defecating there?
He's urinating there very occasionally.
I don't know. I would think age might be a factor, too.
It could be. First of all, mechanical solutions. You can just put a screen or something there to just keep him from going there. Something somebody mentioned over the weekend to us, or I guess yesterday, if you get a big pan, like a pizza pan or something a little deeper, and put kitty litter in it and stick it in the corner, the dog will probably still go over there, but it won't hurt the rug.
You mean have him urinate in the pizza pan?
Yeah, if you can.
Why not just get a litter box? Why would you go to the trouble of a pizza pan?
Because it's a lot lower.
It's
narrower. We're talking about a Sheltie. I'm thinking the Sheltie isn't going to climb over. And also you want something bigger than something like that.
Or something.
And not to encourage the dog. What I'm saying is if you put that there, if these other things don't work, you know, then and the dog actually ends up peeing there, then it won't hurt the rug.
Now, just physically cleaning the rug, I have sprayed it with the urine clean and will have it professionally cleaned. Do you have any other tricks of how to...
You know, I hate to tell you this, but you can... we were talking about dog senses earlier. You could sandblast that rug and you're probably he could still smell urine there. So get your rug professionally dry cleaned, and if you can bear to live with the hardwood floor, don't put it back down for a couple of months. And because if this is a habit,
right,
you're going to have to break the habit.
Right. Right.
And a 9-year-old dog, punishing him is not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So if you remove, now I had wall-to-wall carpeting, kind of hard for me to rip that up, but I had that problem when my one dog got older. She lost her house training, and it was because she was getting dementia. She was older than your dog is now.
9's a little young.
9's a little young. But Right. Those are things that you want to rule out,
Mm-hmm. And
then get that rug clean, have them store it, and see what happens. I'd bet he quit. He's not going
to
go on the floor.
Go ahead.
Do you ever look at this as spitefulness on his part?
No. I don't. Now, see, people say that all the time. I just don't think dogs... I was into a show, a different radio program yesterday, and he felt that they do. But I just don't think dogs are capable of those emotions that mm-hmm. we unfortunately have, which are spite or jealousy or getting even.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't believe that. I don't think they do. What's he get to gain from it?
Yeah,
you know?
And the other thing, in terms of dog training, it really doesn't matter why he's doing it in terms of these ontological reasons. If there's some behavior or medical reason, then you can deal with
mm-hmm.
that. But how do you stop a dog from being spiteful?
Yeah,
I mean, spring
break was over a month ago. He can't be mad all this time.
Well, you also have to remember, going back to the corner of the rug, when dogs can smell just the faintest odors. And if he's peed in the corner, some of the aroma and some of the splash will have hit your wall.
It's actually in the center of the room. It's an area rug,
yeah.
The corner of which is in the center of the room.
But it will get a little bit on the...
the floor.
The floor, you know, whatever is nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's
that's
exactly the spot where he used to poop. On
years
the old
ago,
carpeting, which is long gone, but
yeah,
you can, and we're talking about probably you can get 99.9 million% of the odor gone. Dogs can smell odors in parts per billion,
mm-hmm.
If they're more sensitive than what NASA uses to detect, that's true. Hydrogen leaks. I mean, they have very, very sensitive noses.
Something else, given his age, I don't know when he's doing it. I don't know if it's in the middle of the night or we're gone from 8 to 5, and he's handled that fine before. We walk him just before and right at 5 when we get home. At age 9, could that be a problem going 9 hours?
Yeah, well, that's why we would suggest you go to the vet, because those things can happen.
I know it is for me.
Miss caller, would you mind staying on the line and maybe one of the two of you would take the call? Because we've strayed past our time. And
were you giving us
the
cut
go.
Signal we didn't notice?
Well, no, but So, listeners, stay on the line, and either Jim or Carol will talk to you off the air to finish up this last question. Okay? And then we'll see you guys... I guess in July, huh?
Oh, July 2nd.
This weekend, our trial out at our building.
Okay.
8 o'clock in the morning till
Saturday?
3 in the afternoon. Tomorrow
Saturday
and Sunday.
Okay. And the Dog Training Club number is 643-7733, 643-7733. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon have been Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. It's 6 minutes before 2 o'clock. Let's find out what happened today on the Board of Trade. Here's Dave Dickey.
Thank you very much, Celeste, and good afternoon, everyone. It was a higher day across the Board of Trade as well, except for the nearby corn contracts, which were weighed down by sluggish export sales numbers that were released this morning. Looking at the particulars, July wheat, a high of 373, a low of 368 and a quarter, settling 370 up 2 3/4. September, a high of 382, a low of 377, settling 380 and a half up 4 1/4. December, a high of 393, a low of 387 and a half, settling 390 and a quarter up 4 1/4. The March contract, a high of 399 and a half, a low of 395 and a half, settling 398 and a half up 4 1/2. July corn, a high of 312 and a quarter, a low of 307 and a quarter, settling 308 and a quarter, down 2.5. September, a high of 312 and a quarter, a low of 307 and three quarters, settling 309.5, down 1.25. December, a high of 314, a low of 308.5, settling 310 and three quarters, and that was up three quarters. March, a high of 317 and three quarters, a low of 313, settling 315, up 1.5. May, a high of 320 and a quarter, a low of 316, settling 318 and three quarters, up 2. And July, a high of 320, a low of 315, settling 318 and one quarter, up 2.25. July oats, a high of 149 and three quarters, a low of 145, settling at 148 and one quarter, up 1.5. September, a high of 155, a low of 151.5, settling 154, up 1.25. July soybeans, a high of 844.5, a low of 811, settling 838.5, up 32.5 on the day. August, a high of 809, a low of 785.5, settling 805, up 24.5. September, a high of 739, a low of 721, settling 731, up 12.5. November, a high of $7, a low of 689, settling 698, up 10.5. January, a high of $7, a low of 692, settling 695.5, up 7.5. July soybean meal, a high of 265.30, a low of 255.50, settling 263.70, up 9.20. August, a high of 257.30, a low of 249.30, settling 255.60, up 7.80. July soybean oil, a high of 28.53, a low of 28.05, settling 28.41, up 51. The August contract, a high of 28.02, a low of 27.62, settling 27.98, up 44 on the day. The settlement prices are also in from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, where it was a dynamite day, and feeder and live cattle contracts all ending the week on contract life of contract high. Celeste, and you have the particulars.
I got the numbers here. August feeder cattle, the high 108.85, the low 107.45, the settlement 108.62.5, that up 55. September, 107.50, the high, 106 even, the low, 107.50, the settlement, that up 80. October, 106.45, the high, 105.05, the low, the settlement, 106.42.5, that up 72.5. June live cattle, 90.60, the high, 89.67.5, the low, the settlement, 90.50, that up 82.5. August live cattle, 91.15 the high, 89.55 the low, 90.22.5 the settlement, that up 32.5. June lean hogs, 79.45 the high, 78.37.5 the low, 79 even the settlement, that up 62.5. July, 78.60 the high, 77.37.5 the low, the settlement, 77.70, that down a nickel. August lean hogs, 77.65 the high, 76.55 the low, 77.25 the settlement, that down 2.5 cents. October lean hogs, 64.50 the high, 63.25 the low, 64.47.5 the settlement, that finished up 27.5. And July bellies, 117.17.5 the high, 113.90 the low, 114.05 the settlement, that down 285.
While many other radio stations have